Well, hello out there. In virtual listening land, you have a treat for the next 45 minutes or so. So grab a cup of coffee or whatever your beverage of choice is. Definitely sharpen your eardrums. And I assure you, during this program that's upcoming, you will be gaining a few brain cells and hopefully laughing at least a couple times every 7.25 minutes. Adam Lepp here on The Talking Place, WGH Radio, broadcasting via our website at WWGH1071.com. Many folks, including myself, also use the free TuneIn app. You can download that to your mobile device, search for WGH, and make us a favorite. Then go ahead and start listening at any time. No charge. There are a few annoying ads, and you can always pay for a premium account. Of course, I'm too cheap to do that, so I don't really worry about that aspect. But it is radio worth listening to, an app worth getting. And without further ado, I want to introduce a microphone mate, brother in broadcasting, and most importantly, a partner in crime that has been on with me many times. We've been friends, although we've not met, good 12 years at least. And he's been on with me several times, has not recently been on, so we are definitely due with a capital D. And this guy's name is Nick CJ. And one of the great things about having Nick on is he has a very cool accent. And it's not one of those fake accents that you might hear an actor use or might listen to through some online method. It is truly the way that he utters words. So first, Nick, as they say on What's My Line, sign in, please. Tell us about yourself and that really cool accent that I was talking about. Tell us exactly the nature and the origin of said accent.
I'm laughing already just at your introduction of me. Well, this accent, Nick CJ, live in Wales, in part of England, one of the three countries of England, Scotland, and Wales. And this accent started in London when up to when I was seven, and then it's been to the Midlands in the UK, and now it's been in Wales for 40 years. But I've kept my original London accent, so this is as near to Cockney as you're going to hear on the American radio, I think.
And through the magic of broadcasting, we are actually speaking through a free messaging app. This program's so good, it's going to air multiple times, but you are more than likely hearing this program in late January or early February of 2024. As we pretty much have passed the peak coldness of winter. We're already more than a month past the shortest day of the year, and so we can look forward to spring. Of course, one issue with spring is toward the end of spring is my birthday, and as I've mentioned many times, it's a big, enormous, gigantic milestone birthday, so I guess it's good and guess it's bad. We'll make that determination as that day becomes more and more close. Now, Nick, we met because we are both in the, I would say, IT generalist business. We do multiple things, website development and programming and hosting, oodles of tech support, and we also fix, or at least try to fix, try to fix computers. And in the last 12 years, we've gone back and forth and worked together on multiple projects, dozens of them. I've helped you, you've helped me, we've worked together. I actually have a rather large web development project coming up here in Ohio. That you're going to be helping me with from a graphic standpoint, as you are much more of a graphic artist than I am. I'm really more of a programmer and server administrator. So you contact me if there's an issue with the server or some odd email problem. And, you know, nowadays those are pretty common. And I contact you if I have a web development issue. And also, many times I ask your advice, your assurance if there's a computer repair situation that I am currently working on, and I wanted your second opinion. Normally we agree, so that's pretty much a good thing, but it never hurts to get that second opinion or get some assurance. One thing I'm working on currently, Nick, as you know, is taking apart a laptop because the hard drive, the solid state drive, is ill, extremely ill. In fact, it no longer functions. And I showed that to the client, and he understands that is not an easy job because this laptop, everything is scrunched together like a phone, and getting it apart requires removing a couple dozen small Torx or star head screws, then gently prying off the back after you've removed the feet, of course, the rubber feet, and then taking a few more turns of a screwdriver, finally getting to this SSD drive, which actually looks less like a hard drive that we're used to and more like a piece of RAM or a circuit component, gently removing it, putting on a new one, and then undoing what I just did to take the thing apart, and crossing our fingers that I can reinstall Windows. I'm expecting that I will be able to. So we've discussed this quite a bit. As we know, Nick, the SSD drives, we're going to start talking geeky before we get into politics or get into things a little less serious. You know, I haven't talked about geeky stuff on this show for a while, so we're definitely due for that. These SSD drives, Nick, that look more like a piece of RAM, and they are faster. They don't have the moving parts that a standard a SATA or older IDE drive, or even a SCSI drive, would have. I've had a lot of calls lately, especially on these fancy-dancy gaming computers, where the SSD drive fails. The person paid $2,000 for a computer, turns it on, and suddenly it says boot device not found or Windows not found, and they sit there clueless saying, why is it my fancy-dancy $2,000 computer that worked wonderfully yesterday not working? Are you finding in your business a lot of issues where these SSD drives fail a little sooner than we'd like? And do you have any thoughts on that? Did they maybe put the cart before the horse, that is, put too many SSD drives in without making sure that they are of sufficient quality? And any thoughts of that? Because I imagine you've run into the same problems.
Exactly the same problems, Adam. The funny thing is, I mean, there's two or three types of SSD drive. There's the one that looks like, and Joe Blogs in the Street would think that it was a standard hard drive, but it's a plastic enclosure around the same M2 or M3 stick, which is the sort of RAM stick. And of course, in the one that you're describing that looks like a RAM stick, there are several configurations with slots in different places that won't fit. But yes, they do die, and when they die, they really do die. You don't get any scratching like you did on the old discs where you could hear that it was going to give up. You don't get any warnings, you just turn on and it's not there. I recently had a customer who was just using an ordinary USB stick that everybody uses, and they put their accounts on it, so it never ever entered the computer, and they thought that was really safe. That was a really good idea, because if somebody came and stole their computer, they wouldn't have their accounts with all their secret details, because they were all on this USB stick. And one day he popped it into his little USB slot, and it said, the computer said to him, what have you just put in my USB slot, because I don't recognize it. And when he brought it round to me, it was completely dead. I tried it on about 5 machines and completely dead. So, yes, instant memory is very good, but when it does die, it dies instantly.
Yeah, maybe ironically, you would think something without moving parts, because these SSD memory thingies, sticks or whatever you want to call them, sometimes I have a word for them that you can't say on the radio, they look like a piece of RAM. RAM doesn't usually fail unless you get it wet or you don't put it in right, or it was a bad piece to begin with, because there's no moving parts. Just like on a car, what wears down, like your manual transmission, your clutch, your shock absorbers, your tires, things that are moving are constantly getting wear and tear. So these SSDs, they look really durable. I mean, you're fitting incredible amounts of memory on this little piece of circuitry. It's not even as big as a finger. And you would think it would be very stable and reliable. But again, you wake up one day and suddenly it says it's not readable. Isn't that a bit odd then, that maybe the older school technology where you have moving parts is more reliable than this newer technology without the moving parts? Is there any kind of a logic that you might be able to impart to that?
I think the only logic I could impart is that the one with the moving parts is magnetic. And it's on or off. It's just standard on or off. That's it. It just gives a set of codes that are on or off. With these, anything that's solid state, it's basically a set of transistors which were replacements of the big old valves that we had in televisions, but scaled down to such a degree that they are just an engraving on a silicon chip. The transistor doesn't exist where it's soldered in like we used to have in the old days. It is just an engraving on a silicon chip. And I think they just get fried, to be honest. I think sectors burn out. The line between the different circuits is so fine that the voltages just kill them. And I think that's the usual reason. And people turning on and off machines and pulling plugs on machines and just sending little electrical circuits, too much juice, just out of the blue.
So the logic where moving parts are not as reliable or prone to wear, they're more prone to wear than something without a moving part, doesn't always apply here. Maybe the old school, old reliable moving parts are better. It almost sounds to me like people going back to playing records or even cassette tapes. They're not as fancy as playing something on a flash drive or SD card or right there on the hard drive, but they seem to produce better sound. But they do have wear and tear. Every time you put a needle on a record, it does wear the grooves out, whereas with digital, everything is zero and one, and it'll be that way forever until one day you wake up and it fails. Whereas really the only way to get a regular 33 or 45 RPM record to fail is let it sit in the sun and melt or break it or put a match to it. Now, there's a lot of music I'd like to put a match to or throw across the room, but in all seriousness, that actual physical media is really more reliable than something digital. And it's not a perfect analogy because hard drives still storing digital data, whether it's a SATA drive with moving parts or flash media or the SSD drives. But it seems like some of the old school just might function in a more reliable fashion. And like with a record player, those SATA or IDE or SCSI drives, they're spinning. They're spinning thousands of times a minute, and that's how the data is being read. So you might think that would put more wear and tear, but seems like if they're made well, if it's a name brand like a Seagate, Western Digital, the usual brands that we recommend, it's going to give you better, more reliable service than this newfangled, fancy-dancy, tiny technology where these parts can wear out, even just turning it off and back on again. That's probably about the best way to sum it up. Do you think, Nick, that over the next few years there will be a priority placed on these SSD drives to make them more reliable? Is that something that you think is prioritized by the manufacturers?
I hope they do. I was just thinking of an analogy when you were talking about old-fashioned and fancy-dancy and things, and thinking about all of these post-apocalyptic movies that one watches now, where they've set off various EMFs or EMPs, whatever they call those electronic bombs that can just shut off all electricity. Every new car, all the Teslas, all the modern petrol and diesel cars don't work, and they have to pull out the old 1950s car that's still got a distributor in it.
Yeah,
because it's the only one will work because it's not got electric circuits in it.
Yeah, similar to cars, the carburetors are certainly much more primitive than fuel injection, and you see a Tesla running down the road there. It looks pretty cool. Of course, you probably saw, Nick, in Chicago, not far from Marion. They got much more wintry weather. A lot of people there drive electric cars because the way Chicago is laid out, often you just have to drive a few blocks to get somewhere, and it's stop and go traffic, so you don't need a sports car going 100 miles an hour on the freeway like you might on the Autobahn or somewhere else. And it's so cold, the cars couldn't even charge. They were just sitting there in the snow waiting for it to get warmer. So maybe electric cars kind of similar, Nick. The idea is great, and it's cool to have one, and it's great when they work. But if something goes wrong, you're ready to take a sledgehammer to it. Is that kind of, you kind of feel that way also?
100%. And I mean, we just don't have the technicians in the UK at the moment. The technicians haven't been trained up to service them. So, I mean, just like you and I, we're having to learn how to, every day, how to you know, service things that are solid state, that have got smaller screws. My eyesight's not getting better at 70, but I'm still having to open things that are getting smaller and smaller. I also do some phone repairs, and I mean, I showed my wife this week just some of the sizes of screws, and they are minuscule things. And you think, well, how small can, and how technologically compact can things become? That old carburetor, you know, they still keep working. So maybe we should go back to steam, Adam.
Yeah, there are things to be said for. Plus, you see a car from the 60s or even 70s driving around. It looks pretty cool. You know, the Teslas, they kind of look futuristic. But I love seeing an old Oldsmobile or a Ford Mustang from the 60s, an old AMC car. AMC made some of the best-looking cars. And the old Cadillacs with those tremendous hoods and the big white wall tires. Not the greatest gas mileage, but I tell you, it's like riding on a pillow when you're in those cars. And they look pretty cool driving down the road. Just hopefully you can get a good deal on gas. They weren't made for fuel economy, but they're cool and they're very comfortable. And they are reliable as long as you maintain them well. Adam Lepp here on The Talking Place, WGH Radio, speaking with a longtime virtual friend of mine, Mr. Nick C.J., about multiple topics. And as we discussed earlier, that really cool accent of his that isn't fake, it isn't something through some kind of technology. It is a real accent. He is from Wales. And Nick, you're just a few miles from the England border, right? Or kilometers, they say there. How far are you exactly from the border with England?
10 miles.
10 miles. Okay, about 16 kilometers then, if I'm not mistaken. So it's a little more than walking distance, but it's not like it's that far. So I know we've talked about this before, but with England, Scotland, Wales, and they are separate countries or nations, but there's no customs. You just walk across the border if you were to go to England, right, or drive. Or I mean, it's biking distance. So if you were to take your bicycle or mini bike, you would just drive through, right? There's no customs or anything besides a sign saying welcome to England?
No, there's nothing other than a sign. The sign says welcome to England on one side, and I think it might have a lion on that one. And then if you turn around and come back into Wales, you get the lovely sign that says welcome to Wales and a great big red dragon on it, because Wales is obviously where dragons live. It's they've always been here.
Okay, well, that would make sense. Maybe it should just say welcome to Wales with a big whale. Of course, whale is not exactly the same word, but I'm sure that's come up before. And we've talked about driving on the left side of the road. Is that is universal throughout all the British Isles, and even non-British Ireland, everybody drives on the left side of the road?
It's the left side of the road, but of course it is the right side of the road, as in the correct side.
Correct.
That's the main thing. Yeah, it's the correct side, the left side, yeah. Yes.
I'm not sure I could ever get used to driving on the left side of the road. Another issue, this has been discussed before, Nick. Of course, you recently had a change in the person who is in charge at Buckingham Palace. Prince Charles is now King Charles. I guess the first question is his wife, who is his second wife, the Queen Consort. So she's not a real queen, whereas the Queen Elizabeth's husband was Prince Philip. I didn't fully understand this. I'm sure you know much, much more than I do. Why was Queen Elizabeth's husband Prince Philip, and why is King Charles's wife the Queen Consort? Explain that, because I figured, ask someone who knows who lives there, because I really should know because of my interest in geography, but I'm pretty clueless about that.
Well, he was Prince Philip because he wasn't King Philip, because he was the husband of the Queen, and the Queen was the person who was the boss, basically. So now it's been passed down to King Charles, and Camilla is now known as the Queen Consort rather than Princess. I think because Charles wanted her to be called a queen, she'd always wanted to be called a queen. And I think that's Queen Consort is the compromise between that and Princess.
Okay, so it is logical for me to wonder why she is, as you said, Queen Consort, not Princess. Because she could be. She pretty much had to choose. So could Philip have chosen to be King Consort? Does that exist?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't think it does. What? Of course, the rules are changing slightly nowadays. Right. You know, people are moving boundaries. Interestingly, 3 years ago, I met the Queen Consort and had a personal audience with her. Well, my wife and I, because we work as volunteer literature festival, and my wife had been the longest serving steward as 35 years of stewarding. And she came to visit the festival, and we got to meet her and shake hands and have a little chat. And I've got a very lovely photograph. I'll have to send you a copy of it to see, Adam, of us chatting with her. So I always say that it was us chatting to the Queen, but of course it wasn't. She was just Camilla, Duchess of Cornwall.
At least it's logical for me to wonder about the title of Queen Consort versus Philip being a prince. So there's not a lot of consistency, but there is some. There just is some way to define it, I guess. So wasn't totally sure, but I'm glad I know now. The next heir to the throne is Charles's first son, William, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then the other son, either Henry or Harry.
Harry.
I guess he goes by both names because Henry is his name, but he goes by Harry, which I never fully understood either. Has he pretty much separated himself from the royal family? That's something else that obviously gets a lot of headlines and discussion here in the States. And can he decide to change his mind and go back to being an official member of the royal family? And what are the thoughts about what he's done? Because, I mean, the gossip mills are a little rampant on this.
Yeah, well, the gossip mills here are too. I mean, he has, as we say in the UK, I don't know if they use it in America, he's blotted his copybook with his various antics. I don't know if they're all driven by him or his spouse. I think, and we think here in the UK generally, that it's the work of his spouse that has caused all of the problems. It's very, very difficult to surmise how and why, but I think he was always a little bit rebellious. I don't know if you remember that we had it all over the place.
Yeah, they called him the party prince.
The party prince who decided that it would be a good idea to dress up in a Nazi SS uniform at one point in time and go to a party, which seems a little bit risky to me. I think we're still slightly delicate about that sort of thing. So he's never had the best of judgments, I don't think.
So personally, you're not a fan. Kind of sounds like you aren't too thrilled with his behavior yourself. He should act a little more prim and proper.
I think so. I think if you want the job, I think you've got to, you've got to dress for the job. You know, you don't empty dustbins in a suit, but you don't go to be an executive in a set of orange overalls, do you? So it's you choose the job, then you have to go along with that.
Okay. Yeah, so it doesn't sound like your opinion and the opinion of your countrymen and countrywomen really is much different than it is here. So I guess we shall find out. Now, Queen Elizabeth served for over half a decade, or half a century, if I'm not mistaken, and King Charles is new. What's your thoughts on King Charles? I've heard he has a good sense of humor. I've not met him, and I have challenged Scott Spears dozens of times to get King Charles on his program. So who knows? Maybe he will. Has he been a little more friendly to the media? Does he come across as more down to earth? Does he have a good sense of humor? And you kind of met him indirectly. You met his wife, and I imagine he was there when you were at the event. What are some of the impressions, both from you and from your countrymen and countrywomen, of King Charles, and especially now that he is king?
I think he's very personable, very personal. I did meet him a couple of years before I met the Queen Consort on the boardwalk, as we call it, the between tents. And again, I got some very nice photos of him. But he's always laughing or got some sort of joke or pun or something very light. He's a very easygoing man, but he's also a big businessman and very big on charity. There's the Prince's Trust, which does a lot for young people. He's got lots of businesses that are to do with organics and whole foods and things like that. So I think he's a very interesting person.
So definitely a thumbs up on King Charles. Adam Lepp here on WGH Talk Radio, speaking with a longtime virtual friend of mine, Nick CJ. We've known each other 12 years at least. He's been on the program several times. You can go to our website under my section, look at the archives, and just do a search and you'll find his program, his dulcet tones and opinions and feedback and, of course, humor on my program several times, and he certainly is due. So we are having him on for this show, which is airing late January and early February of 2024. We've been talking about the royal family and King Charles, King Charles's sons, and you've met King Charles. You've met the Queen consort, and definitely give a thumbs up to both of them. Did you ever meet Queen Elizabeth or Prince Philip?
No.
No. Okay.
No, didn't, I'm afraid. Would have been nice, but no, didn't. No, that would have been very nice. Earlier we were talking, I was saying about dressing for jobs, Adam, and, you know, you don't wear a suit to empty dustbins, but you wear, and you wouldn't wear an orange boiler suit for working as an executive. My thought was, how come you've got somebody running for president in your country that wears a suit, but really should be wearing an orange jumpsuit?
Yes, we will discuss the Donald very soon. I know that you have been clamoring at the bit, so we're getting to U.S. politics. But first, we're going to discuss British politics. We've discussed what side of the road you drive on. We've talked about Queen Elizabeth and her long legacy. King Charles, King Charles's sons, including the one, not quite sure what his first name is, but it does have five letters and starts with an H, and his lovely wife. And the fact that you have met the king and the queen consort. I do understand a little more now why she is queen consort and why Prince Philip was Prince Philip, not King Philip or King consort. That's kind of a tongue twister anyway. The other countries that are associated with the UK, Nick, Canada, being fairly close to Marion, Australia and some others. What exactly is the relationship between the king and the king's people, at a lack of a better term, and any power that he might have over the countries, and what the influence is? What are your thoughts on that? And is that influence kind of dwindling, or maybe has it been renewed now that we have a different person on the throne?
So the Commonwealth of the UK, I mean, we had the largest Commonwealth in the world at one point in time. And gradually, I think it's all being given back slowly but surely. We've given back Hong Kong to China, India to the Indians, basically. Canada would like to drop us, I think, and Australia often mention that they'd like to lose us. So I think eventually we will just end up as little UK, but it's still the language that's spoken most in the world, other than Chinese. So that's just because the population of China is obviously bigger than all of the other countries put together. But I think the Commonwealth will shrink slowly but surely as people want to be self-governed. But whether that will work, I don't know.
I think the whole concept, Nick, that we have the royal family and we have the prime minister. The prime minister we think of is kind of like the president. Parliament is basically like Congress. But you guys have the royal family and we don't. Now, we talk about some American families that are like royalty because they've had so many people serve in high office. The Bushes, for example, sort of the Clintons because Hillary had a cabinet position and she was a senator from New York, a major state, almost became president. So almost like the Clintons and the Kennedys somewhat, but they aren't the royal family like you have. I guess explain again, because I know we've gone over this before, but just so we do know, what exactly is the power of in this case, King Charles and other members of the royal family versus the power of the prime minister? And am I right in saying the prime minister is like the president and parliament is like our Congress?
Yes, definitely. Apart from we've got two sort of within Parliament, we've got two groups. One is the House of Commons, which is the one that the Prime Minister goes to. And let's say they wanted to make a new law. Then the Prime Minister will go to the House of Commons and he would ask, I want to make a new law. And then the opposing parties will argue over it. It's all governed over by a speaker, which is very like your House of Representatives. But then on top of that, after that law is decided, okay, let's make a new law that everybody will listen to Adam Lepp's radio program once a week. That does not make the law. The law right. then has to go before the House of Lords, who are not elected. They are not elected by the populace. They're elected by their more like royalty. Their rank within the UK. So people will put them forward to become lords. Maybe an ex-prime minister. There is a lot of handshaking goes on and sort of favours given, I think. But yes, those lords then have the final vote on it. And they are talking about trying to abolish the House of Lords because it's so antiquated, I suppose, is the best description for it. But yeah, there are moves to try and stop that, but it's a fail-safe, really. It's a set of older, mainly gentlemen, but we've got quite a few women in there now, who get to sort of look at everything from another standpoint, which can't be a bad thing in some respects.
Adam here on The Talking Place, WGH Radio, speaking with Nick CJ, and that really cool accent is from the UK. He's from Wales, and it is real. And so that's one of the special treats of this program. We get to hear different methods of speech. Being a radio person, language always fascinates me, and so does geography. And since he's in the UK, we are discussing geography, politics, exactly the differences between the UK and the United States, and some of the current things that people are talking about. Prince Harry or Henry or whatever his name is, why the spouse of the king is the queen consort and why the spouse of his mom, Queen Elizabeth, was Prince Philip, and relationship between the UK and countries like Canada and Australia. Of course, Nick, you want to talk about some of the politics in the United States. We are saving the best for last. As my mama always said, time flies when you're having fun. About 11 minutes left, and I think we could talk about U.S. politics in 11 hours. So, the Donald, previous president, he wants to be like Grover Cleveland. That is someone who was president, was not president, and then was president again. At this point, he appears to be the nominee for the Republican Party. And we don't agree fully on the Donald, Nick. I'm not a big fan of his, but I would say your opinion is certainly below mine. If someone were to mention you over a beer at one of your local pubs there in Wales, what do you think about Donald J. Trump? What would your answer be?
Well, I mean, if you asked for a word, buffoon would
Yeah,
be
words you can say on the radio, not, you know, none of the four-letter words, but a different word.
No. Buffoon, I think, would be the best one. And I sent you a little video that you need to watch after the program. But it just astounds us here that somebody that has got that many court cases pending against him, whether they're true or not, whether he's done anything wrong or not, that person would be in the running to run that huge country of yours.
So
it just seems amazing that nobody more appropriate could be found.
Yeah, and that's kind of the issue. It seems like we're always picking the lesser of two evils. And does that come up also in turning back over to the UK? Again, we talked about the prime minister. It's similar to the president. Tell us quickly about the current prime minister. What do you think about this person? You've had women in that office. We've had women run, but none yet successfully. And looks like we're going to have two older gentlemen running for president later this year. I wouldn't mind seeing Nikki Haley as the nominee, but doesn't look too good at this point. So we're going to have Joe Biden and good old Donald J. Trump. Have you ever had that issue, Nick, where you've had to choose for a prime minister which one you felt was better in terms of lesser of two evils? Or has there been a recent prime minister that you've found to be very appealing?
Well, we're a bit peeved in the UK at the moment. We had a prime minister. We've had all of our prime ministers have been elected, apart from these recent few. And the ones that we've currently got or had were all elected internally within the Conservative Party to fill the space of the last one that went. We've had one that lasted about a month. Our current one seems to be very provocative with regard to his policies, and they don't think that he'll be in, and they're asking him to step down. Boris Johnson was probably, from my point of view, the best. He was a bit of a Trump-type character, a bit of a buffoon, but he did do everything he said he was going to do. He said he was going to instigate Brexit, and he did it. The only trouble is what we used to call it, he told a few porkies, which is from the Cockney rhyming slang, pork pies, lies. It appears that in the recent reviews and things that he's had to go into, it's turned out that he was telling a few little fibs. But he did get things done. And I mean, that's the main thing that you want in a prime minister, somebody who doesn't make the country poor, and passes good laws, and you know, makes things easier for you as a populace, for all of the populace, the rich and the poor.
Now, politically, Nick, you lean more toward being conservative, but I think, like me, you're kind of independent, and we call libertarian. I figure we're Americans. We can kind of do what we want as long as we do it responsibly and don't hurt other people in the process. So would you say it's maybe a little unusual for someone like yourself, who probably leans a bit to the right, not to like Donald Trump? Is that more common in your country, or does pretty much all of the UK find Donald Trump to be a less than likable dude?
No, I think in general, and this is just my opinion, but I would say 90% of the UK just look at him and laugh. They think he's a fool. He's been over here and done various things that have upset people. His Scottish golf course, he thought he'd just buy all the property around it from little old ladies and little old men who'd lived next door for years. And when they wouldn't sell, he would have soil walls built so that they had no light. You know, sort of very, very spiteful things he would do to local people. We get to see a lot of videos of people who he doesn't seem to want to pay after they've done work and things. And it just doesn't sit with UK people, that sort of whole attitude. Bombastic, I suppose you'd call it. It just doesn't sit well with them. It's and that hair, well, what's that about?
Yeah, well, so Donald is not popular in the UK, even among people that are more conservative, which is probably a bit different than it is here. The only problem is we have to pick between Donald Trump and someone in his early 80s presiding over a bad economy, some very questionable social decisions like allowing men to play women's sports, too much money to the Ukraine, which I think a lot of people feel, even if they don't want to admit it. So between Biden and Trump, Nick, do you think Americans are going to have to pick between the lesser of two evils, or is there an alternative, or is it just a sad state of affairs that, you know, we understand Abraham Lincoln and John F. Kennedy aren't running. It'd be nice if they were, because they would win probably with close to 100% of the votes. But is there any kind of logic? Is there a silver lining here that it might just get better, that we'll have at some point a very viable candidate? Or is Biden qualified, even in his low 80s, to make another term?
Looking at it from the UK, I don't think Biden is up to the job. You don't have a third party there, or a fourth party?
Yeah, well, we have independents who are running. We do have Robert F. Kennedy II, and he's probably the guy I'm going to vote for, running as an independent candidate. He's a Democrat, but kind of libertarian like I am, so it's kind of hard to pinpoint him as to a political party. And he might be a spoiler, and it kind of seems like if you vote for him, it's a vote for Trump. That's often how it is with an independent candidate. But who knows? I mean, I never thought Donald Trump would win the election. So all you can do is wait for Election Day and see what happens, because the minute you thought that you have properly predicted what's going to happen, a curve is thrown. But the two main candidates, the D candidate is Biden, the R candidate will likely be Trump. So what's your advice to Americans, Nick? You got to pick A or B. One of those two is going to win. So what's the advice that you can give? I mean, you're aware of the economy issue here. You agree with me about the men playing women's sports. We haven't really talked about the Ukraine, but I would imagine you at least feel he's been a bit too generous to the Ukraine. We may not agree totally. Plus, there's an issue with border control that's causing some real serious security and economic problems. So what's an American to do?
The choice you're offering me, though, is do I want to be shot or do I want to jump off the top of the cliff? And I don't fancy either of those, really.
So you would agree that both choices are not good ones. But if you have to choose between between A and B, what do you do? Because one of them is going to win. And it would be interesting historically to see another president lose and then win, like with Grover Cleveland, two non-consecutive terms. But I would like to see a better choice than Trump myself. The problem is I'm not a fan of Joe Biden. He's too old. He has some very questionable social policies. Border security is a problem. Again, the Ukraine, the economy. And I'm not a fan of his vice president either. And we're not quite sure of Trump's vice presidential choice. And I think it's going to be important this time. So that will also be a big influence in the mix. So you would agree, Nick, there's a touchy situation here in the good old United States or the colonies. And it's fascinating from a historical standpoint, but it's kind of unfortunate in that we really don't have a great candidate to pick from. No John F. Kennedy, no Abraham Lincoln, no one like that, yeah. Who is pretty much well-loved all around.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I couldn't make that choice. I think the only reason I might choose Biden is because if it came to the nuclear button, Trump would just press it willy-nilly, whereas Biden would probably fall over on the way to get to the button, so he wouldn't press it.
Yeah. Well, certainly there are a few interesting months ahead for the great United States of America, and politically we're already in the primary season, so maybe next time we talk there will be some more news and some more insights. Again, just about ready to wrap up this program. My goodness, time certainly did fly, didn't it? But that's how the cookie crumbles, as we say. Nick C.J. from Wales, thank you again for being here on the Adam the Computer Guy mid or morning or afternoon, or in the U.K., late afternoon coffee break radio extravaganza. How's that for a supercalifragilisticexpialidocious mouthful of words? We will be talking to you again soon. As I mentioned, Nick and I are currently working on some tech support and web development and programming projects. So we do talk often, so I think a visit to the radio program is certainly in order. Thank you again, listeners, for lending an ear. Hopefully you had a chance to ponder some thoughts and laugh a few times, because laughter certainly is the best medicine. And last but not least, if you'd like to send me an email, question, comment, complaint, suggestion, or just say, hi, Adam, how you doing? Adam at WWGH1071.com.